Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Oh, that's the Monday sound of Gottlieb after yelling at kids for 14 basketball games. Yeah! There we go. Yeah. But I'm not dropping out of this election. And we're going to Kansas. And anyway. You got to know politics to remember that reference. Doug Gottlieb Show live and direct from sunny Southern California. No, not sunny Southern California. Rainy, dreary, May gray Southern California, which is really fascinating to me on what happens as we cover the debacle, which is the NBA regular season. Look, I am allowed to actually have it both ways. I am allowed to love basketball and hate the NBA season and look forward to the playoffs. That's just the way it is. Before we start, let me first offer my condolences to John Ramos, who is not only our head technical producer on the show, but he's also, I believe, the director of the technical producers for all of Fox Sports Radio. John lost his 94-year-old mother this weekend, and he can take as much time off as needs be. John is an absolute saint of a human being, and just offer our condolences to his entire family. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card. At the end of your first year, it's amazing because Discover's accepted at 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. I think it's fascinating what happens when you want to tell a narrative for your side of the narrative. And we do this in politics a lot. People do it now with the vaccine a lot, right? Like I heard somebody go like, you know, I had COVID, so I don't need the vaccine. Like, okay, that doesn't really matter, but okay, gotcha, understood, fine. If you actually talk to a doctor, they'll tell you, or somebody who understands about doctors understand about vaccines, like getting a vaccine is the best way to stop the thing from morphing and changing and becoming something different and far harder for us to take care of. But whatever. Again, all of these things which we try and draw this political line in the sand and make people choose right or left, right? I have always been pro-vaccine, and once you get the vaccine, anti-mask. I think that's reasonable. What's the point of getting the vaccine if then you have to wear your mask afterwards, right? Fair. But I think the NBA season is, it's kind of comical, right? Like, we've seen tanking take place at the bottom end, and we've saw tanking take place at the bottom end of the standings for years. Like, this is not a new thing. The Boston Celtics have tanked several times over, including going back to when Rick Pitino first took over. They had two lottery picks. They tanked to get David Robinson. Neither of them landed David Robinson. They got Chauncey Billups, who they traded in his rookie year, and Walter McCarty. Those were their two picks in the first round, instead of what David Robinson, who went number one overall to the Spurs. The rest, as they say, is history. But I want you to think about this for a second. Really think hard. Like, I've heard people being critical of the Clippers for losing their last two games of the year, which puts them in the four seed. The four seed aligns them with the Utah Jazz instead of potentially with the LA Lakers or Phoenix Suns. And I've heard people who are educated people and smart people like, what a disaster the Clippers are for what they've done and how they look at the end of the year. Like, okay, do you don't like the Nets? who, what, their best players played, what, eight games together? Okay, or the Lakers, who were awful, fought for their playoff lives and wanted to, if they had to play in the play a game, which they do, now they look good, but now they got to beat the Warriors. Then they frankly, luckily, match up with the Suns, who they match up better with than the Jazz. They want that seven seed. But we can be critical of the Clippers because, well, they didn't win last year. They haven't ever historically won before. So we must assume that these last couple games of the year, which they clearly didn't want to win, is a bad thing. They clinched the four seed, will face the five seed, the Mavericks. No, Luka Doncic can win a game for you. Maybe two, maybe three, can't win a series for you because they don't play any defense. The Clippers lost back-to-back games at the end of the season to the Rockets and to the Thunder. By the way, the Thunder have won only one total game in the months of April and May, and will now avoid the Lakers. Excuse me, the Clippers have now, the Rockets and Thunder have only won one game total in the months of April and May, and will now avoid the Lakers until the Western Conference Finals, unless, of course, one of them lose before the Western Conference Finals. This is Jared Dudley, who's the world's oldest victory cigar, saying this about the Clippers.
I do think it was funny. You see a lot of teams, as you would say, managing their these last couple games of trying to avoid us and stuff like that. It's funny to see that. But for us, it's going to be a challenge of whatever team you play. Because between Jokic, the Clippers, Paul, you have obviously Chris Paul. But, man, we're up for it, man. We're the defending champs. They got to worry about us. And we're getting healthy at the right time, and no one wants to see a healthy Laker team.
Now, I would agree that a healthy Laker team and a cohesive Laker team is a dynamic team and one that was picked to win the NBA title, picked to come out of the West. What he said there wasn't wrong. But if that's a subtle shot, which it felt like, at the Clippers, at avoiding them, like, all right, the Lakers, seeing as they didn't control their own destiny and weren't the one seed this year as they were last year, they too wanted to pick and choose who they were going to play. Like, let's just be candid about the whole thing. Jared Dudley, okay, who I love, right? Grew up in San Diego. Teams passed on him in the West Coast. He went to Boston College, had a very good career with Cookie Monster Craig Smith, has made himself into a longtime NBA player. But he can't play anymore, so it doesn't really matter. Like, all he can do is talk now. And talking trash when you're the guy who's waving the towel, you may think he's speaking in the best interest of the Lakers. I can tell you, I know the people within the Lakers. And a couple weeks ago, they were in a bad way. Schroeder's out with COVID. LeBron's out with the ankle. Anthony Davis wasn't in shape when he came back. And they don't know what they look like in the playoffs or together. And yeah, they kicked the crap out of a couple teams here late in the season, but those were bad teams that were also trying to lose. So if you want to use history as your guide, don't, because the teams are compiled a much different way. If you want to say the Clippers didn't win last year, that's fair. The bubble did, in fact, get them. But the Lakers didn't win the first year of LeBron James. It's always amazing to me. The people who are LeBron fans are so arrogant that they forget that the first year of LeBron in LA was an abject disaster. No, it wasn't a disaster, Doug. Yes, it was. LeBron came to a Laker game drunk with a glass of wine. Everybody was ticked. The coach got fired, Magic Johnson quit, and half the team quit on LeBron because he wanted them traded. They were traded for Anthony Davis. The second year was outstanding. Outstanding. And though there was some malaise in the bubble and they nearly succumbed to the seclusion of the bubble, their families arrived and they got a break because of the protest and missed two game days and end up recharging their batteries. That's what actually happened. This year, they weren't healthy. They changed rosters. And they nearly played themselves into a really, really difficult situation. Best case scenario, they get the Warriors and Steph Curry, who in one game scenario or a two game scenario can in fact beat you. I'm not sure I'd be the one talking trash right now. I just wouldn't. Do I think the Lakers win? Yes. Do I think the Lakers beat the Suns? Yes. Do I think the Lakers will match up with the Clippers? Yes. But I can also say, just like I despise this NBA season, it was too soon after the bubble, and you had this mix of teams like the Lakers, who just got done playing, so they didn't really have a training camp, and they didn't really care. And then you had a group of teams that hadn't played in forever because they were off since the COVID shutdown. No one watched the games. Nobody cared about the games. Media companies that have the NBA on made it out like we have to talk about this NBA MVP thing because we don't care. I can't pretend to care about a regular season and a team dumping games the last two games to smartly adjust to teams they match up better against because the no one cares what your record is at the end of the season if you don't win the championship. And it's not just basketball. The New England Patriots went 16-0, went to the Super Bowl, or 18-0, and lost in the Super Bowl to the New York Giants in a great football game. And you know what no one says about that team? No one says, that was one of the great teams of all time. So while I can say I hated this NBA season, I still love the NBA and look forward to the playoffs, I can also say that the Clippers could very well win an NBA championship or get to an NBA finals, even though they dumped the last two games to avoid the Lakers, because that's smart. If you haven't been past the second round of the NBA playoffs in your franchise's history, why would you create the more difficult and most difficult road instead of trying to find the team that you match up better against? And the Jazz apparently are that team.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. Law enforcement writing tickets. So why take the risk? Do the smart thing. Start buckling up on every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket, paid for by NHTSA. I went pretty strong after Jason Smith, because do you guys remember Jason Smith's rant? Gavin, do you remember Jason Smith's rant about Steph Curry?
Oh, yeah. He called him a system quarterback.
He did?
Yeah, that was one.
Is that where Dan Patrick got that from? Because I heard Dan Patrick going like, he's been called a system guy. I've never heard anybody say that. But I never heard anybody say that.
That is the Jason Smith original.
Wow, that's one of the worst. He's had some bad ones. And I like Jason. And again, I can do both because both are true. I like Jason. I enjoy working with Jason. It's one of the worst takes I've ever heard. It's awful. It's awful. But I mean, like, look, if you really believe it, say it with your chest. You know, what system is it that he's, I don't get it. What do you mean? Like, okay, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan only won NBA titles in the triangle offense. That's a system. But you have to understand basketball to know what you're talking about. That's one of the biggest issues. And look, it's an issue in football. It's an issue in baseball. It's one of the things that when I discuss things with people, like especially in sports that I didn't play at a collegiate or professional level, I talk to people in the sport. It's like there'll be people today who you said George Kittle's not a great blocker. Like, no, that's actually not what I said. George Kittle is not a blocker by trade. He's a great pass catcher. Now, within their system, he'll block. Right? Within their system, he'll block. He does a good job of getting on guys, getting off guys, and moving. You got to be able to move and engage in blocks. But as was told to me by an NFL GM, like the 10 best blockers at the tight end position in football, you've never heard of. Do you know why? Because they don't catch touchdowns. They don't catch the football more than, you know, 20 times a year at most. Those are the best blocking tight ends. Now, Rob Gronkowski is the best pass catcher who was a very good blocker. The GOAT in terms of the ability as a tight end who can catch the football but also could match up and do reasonably well against one of these super talented defensive ends. Kittle's not the worst. Like, Kelce is a non-blocker. He's basically a wide receiver, right? Doesn't block much at all. That's not what he does. But you'll have people that they don't truly understand, and maybe I did not explain in a Cowherd interview about what I meant with Kittle. Let me just explain. If you think that Steph Curry is system player? Like, I don't really. Yeah, he's your best player. He's a two-time MVP. You're going to devise an offense which brings out the best in him. Otherwise, do you know what you are? You're a terrible basketball coach. That honestly, you can go and Andrew Bogut was on my, was it Andrew Bogut was on my podcast? Andrew Bogut was on my podcast. I'm trying to think, it was Bogey who said this? I think it was Bogey who said this. He was like, look, if Mark Jackson remained as the coach of the Warriors, Steph Curry wouldn't be Steph Curry today. Because Mark Jackson was ISOs and ball screens. And what Steph Curry was able to do with Steve Kerr is they had all of these other great passers. And, you know, Andrew Bogut is like a point center. He can really pass the basketball. And a great screener. Draymond Green, great passer. Klay Thompson, not a dribbler, but a good passer. And also great at moving out the basketball. Andre Iguodala, in that version of his basketball life, was like a point forward. He's like a Ron Harper type. Andre Iguodala is basically Ron Harper. Andre Iguodala was a 20-point-a-night guy when he was with the 76ers, and then later in his career reinvented himself as a great defender and a guy who, not a great shooter, but would make big shots, and they played him sometimes at five. It's just like Ron Harper. Ron Harper was a great scorer, hurt his knee, and reinvented himself with Phil Jackson as a guy like Iguodala that could guard every position and just knew how to play. Sean Livingston, point guard in high school, a guy who was mid-range scorer but could really pass. So it allowed Steph Curry to play with the ball or pass and then play without the ball. Be both a point and a two guard. It's brilliant. But if you're going to say, like, we're a system, like, who would be the idiot who would be like, oh, hey, you know what we should do? We should play Shaq out at the high post, right? Have him set ball screens and pops, right? That's what we should do. So it's very frustrating sometimes for people to say things that make no sense. What I was getting at with Jason was he said that it's not his, all these points don't really help them win. Okay. Steph Curry, when he's on the court, they were 10th in the league in offense. When he's off the court, they were the worst offensive team in the last 5 years. He averaged 35-5. That's happened just 32 times. Curry's done it twice. And they're the two most efficient in terms of effective field goal percentage by far. All you need to know is this. They were the worst team in the league last year. They did change some personnel. But by adding Steph Curry, still don't have Klay Thompson. They're in not only the play-in game, but would be in the playoffs if the traditional playoffs started today. So you go from the worst team to a 500 team in the best conference in basketball. So if you don't think he's the most valuable, I mean, it's hard to compare. Jokic has been amazing. And the Nuggets, for the most part, were still just about as competitive once they lost Jamal Murray, and they play through Jokic as their point center. I mean, Joel Embiid's been amazing. Giannis has been amazing. This is LeBron James talking about Steph Curry.
Just look what he's done this year. I mean, I don't know anything else. If you're looking for MVP, if Steph is not on Golden State's team, then, you know, what are we looking at? You know, and we get caught up in a record sometimes. We get caught up in, okay, who has the best record? And, you know, instead of just saying who had the best season that year. And Steph has had, in my opinion, the best season all year.
Okay. And that's LeBron's opinion. What does he know? And I don't think it's kissing up to Steph because they're going to play Steph. And remember when Steph last won the MVP and he won the unanimous MVP, LeBron said, I mean, look at the numbers, they're obscene, and look at all the games they've won. They won 73 games, but if you want to talk about all-around value, and I actually, if you go back, I agree with him. LeBron, at the time, brought incredible all-around value to his team, both ends of the floor. So saying nice things about another player is not new to the biz, and of course, you're getting ready to play them in the play-in tournament. That's obviously something you're not going to give anybody bulletin board material. That said, it did feel like from a pretty honest place, and it didn't have any caveats with it. But what does he know?
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Let's welcome in Michael Lee. You can follow him on Twitter at Mr. Michael Lee from the Washington Post. He covers the NBA and does an amazing job. Michael, let's start with the NBA season. I know they had to get the games in for the TV rights, but you had so many players missing so many games and so much tanking at times. I love the sport. I think the sport is as talented and skilled as it's ever been, but it was a hard season for me to watch. How about you?
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, I love the NBA. I love basketball. And it was hard to get into the season because there were so many games that were played and you had to look and see who was actually available. You know, either somebody had missed because of COVID protocols or somebody missed because of injury or some guys missed because of rest and because they played their fourth game in 5 nights and they didn't want to, you know, grind them to the ground. So you never really got to get the sense that you saw the real teams compete and go head to head. You never saw two healthy squads going at each other. So you look at these records, you look and see who's seated where, but you feel like you've played 72 games and you still don't know what you're going to get in the playoffs because you don't know what the real teams are. You don't know what their identity is. The Nets are the favorite to win a title, but their best players, I think, didn't even play 10 games together. So how can we even measure them as being a title favorite when they haven't had any sort of test throughout the course of a regular season? They're going to be tested in the playoffs. So the way I look at it is that I hope the playoffs turn out to be entertaining because the regular season was a grind. It was hard to get excited because every time you had a marquee game, at least one or two stars was sitting out. So you really didn't get a chance. I don't think we got a full season. We just got what we could just get. We got what we could get.
Yeah, we got what we could get. Do you think the Clippers wanted to avoid the Lakers?
Yes. when you lose back-to-back games to the Rockets and the Thunder, like two teams that are definitely leading the tank way, leading the troops, you know, in the tank. If you lose back to back to those two teams, you are not trying to win games and you are positioning yourself to be fourth. So, yeah, I mean, you have to be really trying to lose if you're going to lose to the Thunder nowadays because they definitely were on free fall the second half of the season or right after the All-Star break. So they weren't trying to win any games. And so, yeah, they don't want any part of the Lakers. But the thing is, it might backfire because, I mean, you're assuming they're going to beat the Warriors in the play-in game and get the 7th seed. But what if they don't and they're the 8th seed and they're right on your side of the bracket? So I thought it was kind of a bad play, you know, because if they're going to get out of the West, they're going to have to get the Lakers anyway. And if I want the Lakers, I'd rather get them early than late, you know, because LeBron's only going to get stronger as the postseason goes on. You know, right now he's probably going to be a little rusty and try to regain his rhythm. I'd rather get him as early as possible than later.
I'm going to disagree with you on a couple of different levels. I would disagree because I think that the Lakers' fear in the play-in game is not that the Warriors can beat them twice. That's not their fear. Their fear in the play-in game is it's the attrition. They don't want LeBron and AD to be playing all these extra games because they're a little bit beaten up. They're an older team. And I understand that, you know, they haven't played together a ton and this will make them better. But I also would tell you that I think it's a smart play. You know, plus they've never been past the second round of the playoffs. So if they get to the conference finals and they see the Lakers, like, fine, you know, it's all going to be a new experience to them. But I think that the fear with the Lakers is that too many games for LeBron, too many games for AD.
Well, yeah, I understand where you're coming from, too, with the Lakers. I just think, just from the Clippers' perspective, yep. If you're a team that feels like you are a championship team and you feel like you can get there, you don't need to be worrying about playoff positioning. You need to just go out there and beat whoever's in front of you whenever you get them. And I would rather get them in the earlier rounds. But when you do this, it looks like you're dodging somebody. It looks like you're ducking somebody. To me, I don't think that sends a message to the players on your roster that you have confidence in them. And I don't know if you send a message to your fans that you're really about it. Like, I think that, you know, if you are really that team and you are really the team that we need to be talking about, then you should say, you know, we'll take out anybody who comes our way. I'd rather have that attitude and that approach. And if it backfires, then so be it. But I don't want to sit around and say, well, if we get on this side of the bracket and we get the Jazz in the second round, you know, to me, I just don't like that attitude. I don't like going to the postseason feeling like, well, this is our best path to the title. There is no best path. The path is through everybody in front of you.
I'll just tell you, I think if the Lakers were in position to pick their matchup, I think they want to play the Suns. They don't want to play the Jazz. That's a bad matchup for them. Is the Suns are a good matchup for them. I think everybody would do that.
Yeah, except for the Clippers, who now want the Jazz in the second round.
No, but they it's a better matchup for them. It's not as good a matchup for
the Lakers. I understand.
Let's get to this. I mean, Steph's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you doing with your MVP vote?
Jokic? Yeah, I'm still going with Nikola Jokic. I just feel like by every metric, by every standard that we usually set for an MVP, he's met them. I mean, I think Steph's had an incredible year. I think he's sensational, you know, especially to do this at 33 years old. I mean, he's just had some amazing performances. He's had the wow moments all year. But I don't want to discredit what Jokic has done and carrying the Nuggets. They did lose their second best player, in the middle of this run, and they still were able to maintain to be the third seed in a really tough conference. You know, he was on the floor. You know, I had someone tell me recently that, you know, this year the MVP is going to come down to the second letter, you know, in the word of, you know, in availability. You know, if you're available, that's really what's going to win you MVP. And he's been there more than anybody else. He's been reliable. And I think, like I said, I'm not taking anything away from Steph, but I think Jokic has been the guy. And I think that it'd be good to have a center finally get the MVP award, because this game is built around guards and guards have dominated for so long. But it's good to see that a center can get up there and carry his team and elevate it. And I think that should be rewarded, because that's what this season was really about.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Mr. Michael Lee is his Twitter handle. He writes for the Washington Post. He covers the NBA and does an amazing job. He's kind enough to spend some time with us. All right, let's get to those Nets, right? I mean, they're a highlight film waiting to happen, but no one really has any idea, like, what that thing. I mean, you play less than 10 games together. We have no idea. Best guess on what the playoffs look like for them.
Well, you know, I think they got the toughest path because, you know, right now, I mean, I don't know who they're getting to play in. I think they'll demolish whoever they get in that first round. But I think after that, either get the Bucks or the Heat. That's going to be a really tough matchup in the second round. Like, that's going to be a challenge, especially if it's Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee's a team that's, you know, better suited to make a deeper run than they have been in the previous years. I think that the addition of Drew Holiday and adding that perimeter defender who can, you know, clamp down on a guard, on the guards, I think he's an addition that can really help elevate them, especially come playoff time. So I think getting him in the second round would be a huge test, especially for a ball club that hasn't really been playing together and don't really know how you're going to handle postseason situations. I mean, obviously, Harden and Durant have played together in the playoffs, but neither one of them has played with Kyrie in those situations. They don't know who's going to be the guy, you know, in the last second shot, who they can really depend on to take that shot. You say it's KD because he's the guy with the finals MVPs, but you know Kyrie wants that shot. You know James is taking that shot. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come together, because, you know, usually by the time you get in the playoffs, you want to feel confident about who you can trust and who you can depend on. But when they get to the playoffs, they're going to be looking at each other like, man, we are really figuring it out right here on the fly. It's a tough place to learn on the fly, but, you know, they have the talent, and I think that eventually they will prevail, but they're going to be tested along the way. And it probably won't be, you know, them steamrolling through anybody. It's just going to be, you know, up and down. but, you know, it's kind of their first run together, and that happens with a lot of championship teams.
Michael Lee joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Feels like there's a lot of pressure on Mike Budenholzer. Is that media pressure? Is that real pressure?
It's real pressure because the last 2 years they had the best record and they were the favorite to come out of the East, and they didn't do it. You know, obviously they got to the conference finals 2 years ago and Kawhi Leonard went berserk. And then last year they just ran into a buzzsaw with the Miami Heat, you know, who just had their number all season long. And Bam, just a great defensive player, and Jimmy Butler just kind of went at it. And this year it's like, okay, we know you're a good regular season coach, and we've seen you do this before. We've seen you do it in Atlanta, you know, where you had the best record and you got swept out by LeBron. We've seen you do this before. But now, like, Giannis is playing great ball. I mean, you know, he's a two-time MVP, and he quietly had an MVP caliber season himself. Like, no one's really talked a lot about him because everyone just says, well, he got two MVPs and didn't win it. He's still playing at that same level, if not better, right now. And so when you have that kind of talent on your side, at some point you got to take that next step. You got to take that leap. And so if the coach can't get it done, then you got to hire somebody who can. And I think that's why there's a lot of pressure on him to try to get it done, because they've invested hundreds of million dollars into Drew, Chris Middleton, and Giannis now. And so if you're not getting it done with that trio of all-star, you know, caliber players, you know, high salary guys, somebody's got to take the fall if you can't get over the hump. And I think that's why there's pressure on Bud.
If you had to bet your salary, who's in the finals?
Bet my salary? I'd say Nets Lakers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's hard to bet against the Lakers because they appear to have a better roster. They have LeBron. They have AD. They were there last year. And the Nets have the most talent, and they have guys that have been – they have two guys that have been there and done that before. I'm with you.
And I think LeBron's already setting the table for it to be the most miraculous comeback for a team to go from seventh seed to the NBA Finals and – you know, knocking off Steph, the guy he says is the MVP in the play-in game, and then you go out, you take out the Phoenix Suns, the number two seed, and then if you get the Clippers in the conference finals, it's just like, it's just so many elements that just make it, a true Hollywood LA story to build up for the release of Space Jam 2. So I think this is all leading up to LeBron. We can't get enough LeBron. He can't go out early.
Michael, great stuff, man. Can't wait to talk with you as the playoffs get underway. Really appreciate you being our guest here on Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences, loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Discover match sell the cash back you earn your credit card at the end of the first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen report. Limitations apply. There's a question I want to try and answer, but I hate. Like, why are you doing it? Like, I hate the whole who is the most at stake for the playoffs. And you know, we could do the Mike Budenholzer because he's a coach, or Doc Rivers because, you know, he lost last year, up 3-1 with the Nuggets, and now he's got another team poised to make a run. Paul George because he's in L.A. or James Harden because he hasn't been good in the playoffs. Chris Paul because he hasn't won a championship. LeBron James because He's got to win back-to-back championship. I don't know. He's got to win another championship or something. So I was trying to figure out, like, who has the most at stake? Who loses the most if they don't win? And by win, I guess we mean win it all. Right? I mean, look, there's, you know, Brad Stevens, and obviously they don't have Jaylen Brown, but, you know, there's talk of him making a move. We talked about Budenholzer. What about Giannis if they don't win again this year? Remember, he re-signed with the Bucks. Are we just kind of re-signing to do this whole thing again? Again? You know, Clippers, it's year two of all of LeBron's last three teams have won a championship. This is should be their magical year. They think they got the right mix. What about for the Jazz? The Jazz are the number one seed. No one's even talking about the Jazz. It's like they don't even exist. They get the best record in the NBA. Nobody cares. Right? Like, isn't that amazing? If I asked common guy in the street, like, hey, who has the best record in the NBA heading into the playoffs? How many down the list would it be to you go like Utah Jazz? By the way, the Suns, second best regular season record. Like, really? Yes. Yes. And go to BetRivers and try and see what the line is. See how far behind they are behind the Lakers, the Clippers, to come out of the West. I would even say that people, and I haven't seen the betting numbers, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Nuggets have close to equal odds to the Jazz, and they don't have Jamal Murray. And as good as Jokic is, Jamal Murray was the story of last year's playoffs up until, you know, ultimately they beat the Clippers and lost to the Lakers. Ultimately, they're the story. So, I don't know, I'm interested in this. Who has the most to lose? Who has the most at stake? Gavin, let me ask you, who do you think has the most at stake?
I think it's Mike Budenholzer because there's been reports about his job being on the line. They made the big moves to bring in Holiday. And it seems like, you know, at some point when you have what we are calling or used to call the best player in the NBA, you eventually have to get it done. And I think part of his run with Atlanta does seem to just tie around him very easy. Also, Doc Rivers. He's in his first year with the Sixers, so it's not as much.
He's also won a title. If you've won a title.
It's true.
Yeah. Right? Like, all of the stuff we say about you goes away as soon as you win one title. You didn't have to play well. You win a title, nobody says anything.
Yeah. And then on the player side, it's hard to. I go between Paul George and James Harden. I kind of think there's more on the line for James Harden because he's joined this team and he, you know, shamed his history in Houston now. I mean, I would assume he'll never be welcome back for a long time at least. I would think Brooklyn, you know, they need to get it done after the narrative. And I mean, man, Kyrie. By the way, did you see Kyrie first 50, 40, 90 guy in a long time? Ninth.
You know, I mean, he's amazing. Kyrie's amazing. You just have no idea. Like, I do have some I'll share with you on Kyrie in a second. I think I know who has the most at stake, and it has not yet been listed. Iowa Sam, what do you think?
I also agree with Gavin. I think that the Bucks and Budenholzer, they gotta go a little farther this year.
Okay, but going further, I mean, ultimately, that doesn't mean winning a championship to you.
Yeah, it's true. It's true, but, you know, steps, baby steps.
All right, what about you, Deb Carson? Who do you think has the most at stake?
Well, I think as a coach, Budenholzer, but as a player, I think Paul George. I think James Harden has always been, even though he's a brilliant player, he's always kind of been a problem child wherever he's been or perceived as such. Paul George, I think, because of the dismal performance last year during the postseason, and because I think Clippers fans were all in on the combination of Kawhi and Paul George, I think George has a lot on his shoulders.
I would agree with all of those sentiments. I think Giannis, in terms of player, and James Harden, you're the MVP, and for Giannis, a multiple time MVP. Like, dude, at some point, you got to win one of these things. You got to at least come out of the East. And for Harden, who hasn't played well, you know. So, but I'll tell you what has the most at stake is the NBA. is the NBA. If the Nets get to the finals, the Nets win this thing, it's terrible for the NBA's regular season. If the Jazz don't get to the finals, the Jazz and the Suns, like, people aren't stupid. They're going to look around and go, like, what's the point? Like, what is you guys are just playing games that literally don't matter. No matter.
I think most people feel that way about the regular season anyway, though.
They do, but it will only cement the point that it doesn't matter. Like, if the Lakers get to the NBA Finals, right, and the Lakers who, I mean, they're in for whatever reason in college basketball, UCLA going from first four to final four, great thing. In the NBA, not a great thing. Not a great thing. It just isn't. It's like, why do I care? Do I even list the standings? Doesn't matter. Just tell me who's in the playoffs and who's not, and who has home for the home court advantage. It literally should mean nothing to people. Nothing. Which I don't think it means anything to people anyway, but I do believe that that's a key element to it. Key element to it. Go ahead, Deb. I'm sorry.
No, I think now that players can just pick up and go play with whoever they want to, wherever they want to, I think people are kind of resigned to the way that is. That's how it is.
Yes. Well, they're resigned to it. But again, because if you have the Bucks who finished strong in the regular season, right, and you have an MVP who stayed with the team that drafted him, that can... on some levels, that can hurt that narrative. If the Jazz are able to do it, and I know not all those guys, and Jordan Clarkson was a Laker and whatever, now he's become this off-the-bench weapon for them. But, you know, they got Gobert, and they got Donovan Mitchell, and they have a really good team. It will hurt them in ratings, but it helps you in the idea of small market teams and guys can build from within.
Mm-hmm. Like the Spurs.
Yes.
Back in the day.
Yes. Which, again, part of that is, it's weird. We as people, what's the lowest rated NBA Finals? Right, was when the Spurs are in it. Spurs, I think Nets were the worst. So some of it is your location. Some of it is, you know, the reach of your team and the name and brand. But we say we like guys that stay home, but we watch all the stars even when they leave. Deb Carson, join us in a moment. I want to say this about Kyrie. And I don't know if we have that clip of Kyrie saying, you know, there's so many other things going on in the world that basketball is just not that important. I'm going to tell you this. Kyrie both gets it and doesn't get it at all at the same time. Right. He gets it and he doesn't get it at all. Right. This is Kyrie Irving asked about this season. 50, 40, 90 guy. Getting ready for the NBA playoffs. Take a listen.
I'm not going to lie to you guys. Like, a lot of stuff is going on in this world. Basketball is just not the most important thing to me right now. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on overseas. All my people are still in bondage all across the world, and there's a lot of dehumanization going on. So, you know, I apologize if I'm not going to be focused on y'all questions. You know, it's just too much going on in the world for me to just be talking about basketball. Like, I focus on this 24/7 most of the time, but it's just too much going on in this world not to address.
Okay, so you want to talk about the bombings in Israel? Is that what you want to kind of get to? I don't know how to break this to Kyrie, but he's right and he's wrong at the exact same time. He's right. There's some terrible stuff going on. You know, crime is kicking up in the United States. We still clearly have an issue getting along with one another. I think not nearly as bad as it's made to seem on the news, but it's not perfect. Okay? You have people that don't think an election, even though it was legitimized by everybody, you still have people like, oh, that wasn't a legitimate election. Like, what world? Including former president. Then you have overseas, what's going on in Israel. What's going on in other parts of the world? What's going on in India with COVID and all these? There's this bad, and which is why you playing basketball, talking about basketball, being all about ball, and us asking you questions, that's why you have your job. Your job, for better or for worse, your talents, okay, have allowed you to have all these other philanthropic plans and good deeds that you do, all based upon the fact that for those 3 hours, we don't want to know about those other things. That's how it works. You're right. There's a lot of things that are more important than basketball, which is why basketball or football or baseball or youth sports are so important, because it allows all of us to go like, yeah, look, I know the other stuff is bad, but like, hey, for the next 3 hours, let's not think about it. Let's just go watch Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and James Harden and Blake Griffin, like throw alley-oops off the backboard to each other. Like, he both nails it and gets it on what's really, really important, except your job is to take us away from that. Your job is to take us away from that. By the way, the Lakers are, with the Clippers, the biggest favorites out of the West. The Jazz, who have the best record in the NBA, are plus 320, which is, as opposed to Lakers and Clippers, are plus 220. The Suns, who are back one game behind the Jazz, plus 550. In the East, the Sixers are plus 320. The Bucks are plus 290, and the Nets are minus 120.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, I played in the minor leagues in basketball. I was in the CBA up until like the day before the first game. I told that story, I think, last week on Cowherd. I was the first pick of the USBL draft, which is now defunct, but a great league, which most of our guys that played in the NBA. And I mean, those guys were so unbelievably talented. I was in Israel as a player in, what was this, 2002, right? So 2003. No, 2002. So 2002, I was in Israel. And the way it works when you play overseas is sometimes they'll do funny stuff with the money. So here's the really quick story. Okay. When you're Jewish, you can get dual citizenship. How does that help you? Well, in the Israeli league at the time, you could have unlimited Israelis. You could have two, it's called a Bozeman B, is an Israeli who is going to be your first couple of years, you're a Bozeman B. And then you could have two Americans. The rules have changed some. The taxes have changed some for them. But basically, long-term, it helps you, and you can play in the rest of Europe as an Eastern European. You used to be able to play as a complete European, now it's an Eastern European. It allows you more opportunities to play professional basketball overseas if you have a foreign passport, because different leagues have different ceilings, numbers of Americans you can have on each team. So I'm in Israel, I'm playing as an Israeli. And because I'm an Israeli, my contract goes through June. Well, we get to March and the season is over early in April. And then there's the playoffs and we're probably the second best team, but I think we were running about fifth and we were about to get dusted because our best player was Corey Carr. He had torn his ACL and we just weren't cohesive. We weren't playing great. And all of a sudden I started looking at my bank account. And again, an American gets paid in American dollars the first of every month. An Israeli gets paid in shekels, and then they transfer it to an American bank account. It's supposed to be the first of every month. But I started to notice that my money wasn't going in until the 4th or the 5th or the 7th or the 2nd. And basically, they were waiting for the exchange rate to be more favorable for shekels to dollars, and then they would pay me. True story. So I would have had to stay for 2 months after the season to get all my money. And during those 2 months, I would have had to take basic training with the Israeli military, even though it's not like stripes or anything, right? Army training, sir. And there's a better backstory to it. Maybe I'll tell it on the podcast if I haven't already. By the way, All Ball Podcast, Kim English, new head coach of George Mason. You should download it. It's amazing. So I decided to leave because the president of the club, I kept going up to him saying, Mr. President, if you would just promise me, you don't have to put it in writing, promise me, man to man, I'm going to get every penny. Because what happens is if I was to go home, I wouldn't get my money. And who knows if I stayed there, if I'd get my money. And they were already, and we're talking about a couple hundred bucks out of each check, but like, what is the point, you know? So, and he kept saying, well, I will do the best I can. Like, no, no, just tell me, yes, I give you my word. That's all you got to do. Look me in the eye, shake my hands, we'll give you all your money. Okay, that's enough for me. He wouldn't say that, so I left. I went to the ABA. So the ABA was, at that time, the best minor league. The D League was just starting up. The CBA was defunct, and it was, it kind of combined with the IBL, which I actually played in as well. And the ABA was just, because there was no real buyouts, there's a Venezuelan and a Philippine Spring League. You can make a bunch of money. And if you go and look at, go look at players who play overseas, you'll notice at the end of their career, they always go play in Venezuela and in the Philippines. Why do they do that? Because you can make like 10 to 15 grand a week. You play a bunch of games. It's a shortened season, but you make a bunch of money, a bunch of cash. Guys will play in the D League. They go play in the Philippines or go play in Venezuela. So in order to do that, you got to have no buyout or a small buyout in your contract. The ABA had that. So I show up. I played two games in Detroit against the Detroit Dogs. I'm playing for the Phoenix team in the ABA. We get home, and I've only been with the team for 3 days, back-to-back games, and the travel the day home. And we have practice at Grand Canyon University. So we have practice, and we go in there, and all the guys are dressed in, like, sweats. And yes, I know it's 100 degrees in Phoenix in late March, early April, but they're in sweats. Meanwhile, I'm like stretching out, getting taped up, getting loose, ready for practice. So I go ask some of the guys, like, hey, you guys practicing? Like, nah, man, we ain't practicing. Why not? We ain't get paid. We ain't practicing till we get paid. Now, keep in mind that I had also not been paid, but I'd only been with the team for 3 days. So the GM shows up, the coach shows up. The coach's name is Maz Track. He's now an assistant with the Washington Wizards. Great guy. His brother, Mark, just retired. Two stints as USC head coach. So Maz shows up and says, what the F are you guys doing? Yo, man, Track, we ain't practicing. Why? We ain't been paid. So he gets on his cell phone, calls the GM. The GM comes down. The GM calls the owner. The owner comes down. So I'm out there shooting, and like, they're working me out. And I'm in a rock and a hard place. Like, I want to support my guys, but technically, like, I'm not owed any money. So the owner's like, I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to practice. He's like, why not? I was like, well, am I having like a one-man practice? Right? It's like, there's 11 dudes right there that aren't practicing, and I'm running up and down and getting a sweat and whatever. Like, I'm good. I got a good workout in. Like, you got to pay these guys. It's like, don't worry. Why aren't you guys practicing? They're like, we haven't been paid. And I started to tell them, hey, listen, would you go work at McDonald's if you didn't get paid? So why would you not? The NFLPA wanted this hard and fast stance, and they got on a call and they said, hey, don't show up to these voluntary off-season workouts. Have you looked at the numbers of guys that are showing up? Oh. The offseason is split into two phases. The first phase is April 19th to March 14th. So obviously that's coming to an end. But we saw the rookie mini camps, and those were well attended. Now you have the 1 week vet camps where everybody's supposed to show up. The Broncos, the Dolphins, the Jets, the Giants, three of the teams whose players who said they wouldn't show up in the offseason, Broncos attended 75 players. Remember, it's a 90-guy roster. Dolphins, 70. Jets, 80-plus. Giants, only 40. Look, if the NFLPA really wanted guys to not have to show up, they would have tackled this when they negotiated the collective bargaining agreement. Instead, you have to keep in mind, these players, a lot of them have roster bonuses, workout bonuses, or just they got to get to work, especially the rookies. They got to show themselves. The guys are in the last year of their contract. And, oh yeah, by the way, if you get hurt off-site, guess what you don't necessarily get? Your money.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get back to the NBA. Rick Bucher joins us, Fox Sports 1 NBA analyst. Bucher, I'll tell you what I said twice during the show. I completely get what the Clippers did, and I agree with it. Why would you, just out of ego, want to have a tougher matchup when you could have a matchup you feel better about in getting, you know, the four seed? I think that's the smart thing to do. But what do you think?
Yeah, I don't actually have a problem with it. I don't know that you that the Clippers could guarantee that they were going to be in a certain place, or that this was all about avoiding the Lakers per se, as it was, okay, we got a couple games left. How do we want to approach these games? We've had a couple of stars who have been dinged up. I mean, I couldn't help but think about LeBron and Anthony Davis because of the circumstances that they were in, having to play yesterday, and both tweaking their ankles as a result, and that now we're looking at them in a different context going into the postseason. Right. The angling of and positioning of the Clippers to me, you know, I'm sure Lakers fans and anybody who wants to carry on the narrative from last year about the Clippers can say, oh, they're scared of the Lakers. I really don't think it's that. I don't think they're afraid to play the Lakers. I think that they're looking at it in the context of what's our best avenue to winning a championship. I think of Kawhi Leonard in particular.
Correct.
I think of Rajon Rondo, and I look at them and I go, are they afraid of LeBron? Are they afraid of the Lakers? I don't have any sense that either one of them has ever felt that way, much less that would feel that way now because of what I've seen from the Clippers this year, where I just think they are, I don't know whether they're good enough to get it done.
I would agree. I also would tell you that I'm not sure the Lakers want to play I'm not sure the Lakers want to play the Clippers.
I would agree. I would agree with that too.
Because they have a substantial amount of respect for Rondo. They have a substantial amount of respect for Kawhi Leonard, and they are built. They're really built to stop LeBron, right? And and their offseason acquisition of Serge Ibaka has gone much better than that of Marc Gasol, so much so that they had to basically replace Marc Gasol and go get Andre Drummond. You know, so
honestly, I haven't really been in love with the Montrezl Harrell addition. No, I don't think he fits.
Well, no, they have three pieces that if they could combine, right? You got Drummond, but he doesn't help you on offense. And then defense is, you know, he's, and then what do you do with, you can't play Marc Gasol and Drummond together. And then Montrezl Harrell at times, his play has been limited because, you know, like he has, there's one thing he does in terms of scoring. He doesn't really defend. He's not really a rebounder. And is he kind of in the way of Anthony Davis and LeBron and how they play? So, and, you know, the idea of Gasol was a good one. The problem is Gasol's washed.
Yep. No, look. I was one of those that looked at the additions that they made last summer and thought they got better. And that is not the way that it's played out. I dare say that if you had it to do all over again, the Lakers would swap Wes Matthews for Danny Green. They thought that was going to be a decided upgrade. Dwight Howard to Marc Gasol, clearly not as efficient or providing anywhere close to what Dwight Howard did last year. And Montrezl Harrell, I feel like one of the he was an emotional energy player, and the way he fits with the Lakers and playing with LeBron, as you said, whether it's with AD or whether it's with LeBron, it's not an efficient game, and he doesn't give you what you ultimately
need
in order to get the most out of LeBron and AD. You have to be a complementary player. And to your point, you have to do one thing really well, and then LeBron is able to apply that to the big picture. And I don't know what that one really well thing is that Montrezl Harrell does.
Stug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports. I think he attacks the rim with great energy. I think that would probably be the thing.
But okay, so that doesn't really fit with the way that if you're playing as a complementary player with LeBron. Agreed. That works.
No. I listen. You and I actually see eye to eye on this thing. Rick Bucher joining us here in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. But I think the point you made to start was the smartest point that not enough people have played. Like, the Lakers don't really fear Steph Curry per se. Like, they respect Steph Curry, and he can beat you in a game, but what they feared of the playing game is the extra games, and then the extra games the next series, and then the extra games the next series.
Right.
And ultimately, more games on LeBron and Anthony Davis and an older team means somebody's likely to get hurt, right? That's which kind of played out yesterday.
Yeah, well, and we've seen it. I mean, Alex Caruso just recently has to sit down with a bad back. They've had – this is what is normal for a team that is a defending champion, is that when you get to the end of the following season, you're carrying – you're worn down a little bit more than anybody else, and health is a bigger factor. It's why – it is so rare that teams, I think we've gotten accustomed to teams repeating or returning to the finals because of some of the teams that we've had and where they've been. But it's really, there's usually a beatdown as a result of playing and winning a championship. And I feel as if that is what we are seeing in much the same way. When, especially when you are riding particular players, your core is not only essential, but it's relatively small. And I felt the same way with the Warriors in 18-19. Just not, you know, I didn't expect KD to break down, but I thought, not that I was wishing it, but Draymond or Steph or Clay, you just can't make that many deep runs year after year and it not take a toll. And I think that's some of what we're seeing with the Lakers and why the road there is so vital. And these additional games and then who they've got to play and long series. As I said on Undisputed this morning, like if you're asking me, every team in the Western Conference, you can raise a question. You can suggest there's an Achilles heel.
Right.
But if you're asking me if I'm going to take – but that includes the Lakers –
yeah.
And if you're asking me, am I going to take the Lakers or am I going to take the field? I'm going to take the field. Not because I think there's the team out there that's going to beat them, but I think the residual effects of having to take the route that they're going to have to take is, and the condition that their two stars are in, is there's ultimately going to be a price to pay.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think here's what, and I heard the argument, we actually played it earlier on the show, Rick Bucher joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Like, more ammo for you is pretty simple. Like, the Lakers were actually not in a good place in the bubble, right? But they had they had favorable draws. Right? They were playing the Rockets, who had no chance of beating them. None. Right? That was the absolute terrible matchup for the Rockets. They knew it. Everybody knew it. But they were still in kind of a bad mental space, much like the Clippers and everybody else. And then when the Kenosha stuff happened, they got 2 game days off. So they had like 3 days where there's nothing happening and they kind of got to rest and that helped them. And then their family showed up and that helped them. And then the Clippers lost and they're like, dude, this is a, and then they didn't have to play the Bucks, you know? So you didn't end up, and the Heat weren't healthy. So,
right.
I mean,
right.
And I'm not sure even all factors that no one mentioned, but that's what happens when you win a championship. It's like the Warriors, when they won the first championship, like nobody mentions. Or nobody mentions when the Cavs came back from 3-1. Like, not only was Draymond suspended, but Andrew Bogut got hurt, didn't play the rest of the series. Like, those are big things. So it is interesting on what happens. I haven't asked you about this off-air. I've asked you on what happens in Boston to fix that thing? Because that thing is not working.
Yeah, no, it's not. And I'll be honest, I have not heard anything definitive in terms of coaching change or what dramatic change they could potentially make when it comes to the roster. The difficulty anytime when you're dealing with Danny Ainge when it comes to the roster in particular is that he's involved seemingly in every conversation. And that's not made up. He is genuinely exploring every option, but what he ultimately is willing to do is always a far cry from the conversations and the innuendo that is out there about what they could potentially do. So they need to be fixed in a major way. And the Kemba Walker contract is going to hurt them in a big way. You know, a lot of people saw that as a win for them when they made the deal, but ultimately they are overpaying in a major way. And then they're stuck with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, who are they're duplicative, and you need to make a decision at some point. And the difficulty there is you could potentially pick wrong. You could go with Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown, I think, has a little more athleticism. I don't know if he can be a better player, but 2 years from now, he might just be. At one point this season, he was demonstrating that he could be. And so Danny's got to make some tough decisions, and he has to make some decisions that are ultimately going to fall on him. And up to this point, he's found a way to avoid that. But if they're going to take the next step to being a true championship contender, then he's going to have to pull the trigger on a major move. Because as is, it's not as if there's one little tweak and they get better. They need to do something significant in order to be considered title contenders next season.
You buying the Nets?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself because I think the Knicks are limited. I don't know how much they can do, but I will be very interested to see if that's the second round series that we see, because it will be, you know, fights, styles makes fights, and they're two opposite styles. And I just, the Tom Thibodeau and the way he coaches defense and what they'll try to do to the Nets, I'd be very interested in seeing how those games are officiated and how uncomfortable they can make the Nets in a seven-game series.
He's Rick Bucher. Check him out tomorrow on Undisputed. He's also on Speak for Yourself. You can follow him on social media at Rick Bucher, RICBUCHER. Buch, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Doug.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.